This is an Enterprise Cybersecurity Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here today with Aaron Higby.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here. So I'm the co-founder and chief technology officer of a company called FishMe, Inc. And we are most notably known for getting started in 2011, offering a service to send simulated phishing emails to people at work to immerse them in the experience, to give them practice identifying and reporting suspicious emails.
It's become one of the major routes, hasn't it, for attacking companies, phishing. How do we raise awareness? Because some of these emails are getting to the point where it's hard to tell the difference between real and fake.
Awareness was the initial battle that we went to work on because it was an awareness issue in the beginning. And what we've noticed over the past couple of years, it's very hard to turn on any world news and not hear about some sort of cybersecurity breach, most often started with a fish. And even as a consumer in our day-to-day business, our banks, all the institutions that we're working with, they typically do send you emails letting you know, hey, we would never ask for your password, be on the lookout for suspicious emails, especially in tax times and other times like that. Now our focus and our customers' focus is on that muscle memory, that behavior of when there's something not right about an email that stands out at you, a nuance that a human can understand, that they should report it.
How do we, though, persuade people to report it? Because people are worried they're going to report something that's real. They will often look at something before they report it, so the damage has actually been done, at which point they don't want to make a report because they're worried it will come back to them.
Not only that, but there's a reputational problem with reporting. For years, we've had the ability to report spam or junk email. When you do that and you still get spam the next day, you wonder, are my reports going anywhere? And the sad truth of that, in most cases, they're not. When you do report spam, it goes into some automated process that tries to crowdsource that and hopefully identify a bad actor there. But you never get any feedback about that report. So that was one of the challenges when we really introduced the concept of reporting a phishing email. And that's something that's important to all our customers, too, is to give feedback to the user. And the feedback could be, thanks, you did it. You found something that could have impacted our organization, but your report helped. But it's also good to get the feedback of, no, this is a legitimate email from LinkedIn. If you don't want emails from LinkedIn anymore, there's an unsubscribe process. So just them knowing that there's life on the other end of that report button is helpful to encourage that.
But that unsubscribe process has also been subverted with the phishing email, hasn't it? If we look around, a lot of the phishing emails I get have an unsubscribe button. If you click on that, it tells people this is actually a live email address. So it encourages them then to spread that email address even wider, which increases the amount of mail you get.
Yes and no. So we also have a phishing intelligence company. And one of the things that's been fascinating to me as I've monitored the state of the fish for years is that the attackers do spend a lot of time giving care to their infrastructure, honing their craft when it comes to the exploit, and they're not necessarily always spending a lot of time on the phishing story. In fact, just recently, there's been a lot of information put out about an organization dubbed Fancy Bear with ties to allegedly Russia. And if you analyze their last 10 email campaigns, and they're supposed to be very advanced actors, they use the same variant of you've received a password reset, someone has your password's about to expire. There isn't a lot of ingenuity or thought placed into that. And that probably has to do with the fact they're spending so much time curating the infrastructure needed to pull off a fish that the story is a bit of an afterthought. Now, surely there are some more advanced ones, but when we look at the ecosystem of advanced actors as well as crimeware, people that are involved with ransomware and things of that nature, they have a few themes that they tend to reuse over and over again, and it hasn't changed a lot over the past few years.
Those themes are things that go on every day. If you sit on a support desk in a company, you are constantly bombarded with users who've forgotten their email. They've forgotten their password. They're asking you to send them this stuff. They want an automated process internally. For that to happen automatically to them, they think that's great. The same is true when we see emails and passwords time out after 3 months. Therefore, to some degree, we're conditioning users to understand that they will get these emails regularly. How do we find a better balance between improving security but not making it so obvious that the bad actors can just hook the process?
You're touching on a key point here. You mentioned those password reset emails, but imagine you're in a finance team and you get an email about an invoice. Your job is to open those emails, and attackers definitely have figured that out. And then the other thing that has given rise to this is the adoption of cloud services. And so it used to be we would interact with services local to our company's network. But now, as we're trying to gain cost efficiencies, we have maybe an HR management system in the cloud, another maybe benefits management system in the cloud. All of these start the process with the end user by saying, hey, our company is using this. Here's an enrollment link. Go ahead and enroll in it. And all of those cloud services do that communication via email. Like, hey, you haven't filled out this survey that you were required to. Go to this cryptic link in order to do that. So as this rise in cloud services have been pulling people outside of the organization and encouraging people to click links, it has created a perfect storm.
There are two parts to that clicking link, isn't there? The first is where people have used URL shorteners. Users are not generally aware that there are ways to re-expand that shortener before they click on it. The second is that many of the links that come out that are fake, people feel under such pressure to respond that they click without actually bothering to read the URL. I put up online the other day an attempt to get me to open a document claiming I got a new Dropbox document, but it was from Dropboss, B-O-S, not B-O-X, .com. I spotted that because I check these things when I get these emails. That would have fooled a lot of people.
You told me that story, and you also mentioned there was something else about that email that felt off to you. What was that?
First, it came from an email account that didn't exist in my company, but I'm the email administrator, so I have an inside line. Second was the formatting just wasn't quite where I expect it to be.
Yeah, there was some nuance that you were able to pick up on, and I think a lot of people are hanging their hat and hoping that artificial intelligence or machine learning is going to be the silver bullet that stops this phishing epidemic. To your point, we had a phish that was targeted to members of our finance team. It's a very popular scam, the CEO fraud business email compromise, and it forged the CEO's email address to our VP of finance, and there was a number of things about it that stood out to him. First of all, the email started off with, "Dear Sam, I need you to send this wire at the close of the business day. Thank you very much." And then sent from my iPhone. So when Sam received this email, there was a few things about it that stood out to him. One is our CEO never starts an email to him as "Dear Sam." And it's not that our CEO is a bad guy. He's just busy. So he's always trying to crank out emails. And then the other thing is, in business, you're never trying to pay your bills before the due date, right? You wait till the very last day. And so Sam knew that, too, about Rohit. And then the last part was, because it's a joke amongst the senior management team, all of us are on iPhones, except Sam, of Korean origin, loves his Samsung Android phone, and so does Rohit. So that's a banter that they have. So when he saw that sent by an iPhone, that stood out as something that was odd. And what I love about that story is that fraud, that scam, there's no links, there's no attachments. It's not like some security perimeter technology was going to prevent that. It was the nuance, it was the intuition in Sam that he was able to put things like that together. We're not going to be able to predict what the next wave of phishing is. We unfortunately are going to have to rely on that.
Being insiders, we look at this and we see those nuances. They leap out at us as something that isn't balanced. For the average user, that's really not going to happen. How do we begin to gamify this? How do we build tests, games inside organizations to see who spots a potential phishing email, who doesn't? What lessons can we then use to educate users without it feeling like we're giving them a hard time?
It's something that can be learned as far as giving people practice, exposing them to some of the common tactics, exposing them to the emotional triggers that these attackers use. The stories may change, the malware may change, but things like fear, reward, curiosity, those are things that can compel people to click that they can potentially spot on. But it's not going to be perfect. You can do all the training in the world, and we help millions of people learn how to spot phishing through our customer outreach. The other aspect to this is almost herd mentality, herd protection. One of the things that we observe time and time again is when an attacker wants to get into an organization, that infrastructure that they set up to have a successful phish is valuable. It takes them time to curate that and get it ready. So they don't want that infrastructure burnt by only lobbing in one phishing email and hope that it works. It is a marketing effort for them. So oftentimes they'll send in batches of 10, 20 at a time in hopes that they can compromise someone and then gain privileges in the network easily. And so the other critical aspect of this is the reporting of those emails. And we have metrics on different industry verticals about the report and accuracy rate depending on where you are. For instance, in financial services, For every person that clicks one of our simulated phishing emails, two people inside of that organization are reporting it, and they're often beating the person that was first to click.
Last year at a security conference, I listened to Nordbank present how they'd been doing gamification to improve security across the organization. One of the things they did was they looked at how they could improve peer-to-peer pressure. That was, each department was rated on how it responded to some of the tests they threw at them. And what they were looking for was for somebody in the department to spot the phishing email or the attack and then notify other people so other people didn't click or fall prey. And they found that increased their security awareness massively inside the organization. But that's great if you're prepared to spend the time and effort doing this. How do we persuade companies that there is a serious benefit to be gained from that time and effort?
Well, it was a difficult conversation when we first started doing this because it was a crazy idea. What are you going to do? Are you going to trick people at work? They're going to be offended and they're going to go to human resources about this. Many of our initial customers, they came to us after a bad phishing breach. They purchased all the security defensive technologies and were feeling like, well, what else is left to try? I guess we can try to invest some time and energy into our people and hope for the best. And so those brave few customers really were the pioneers that showed that this could be successful. And now we're on our third year of publishing this enterprise susceptibility report. You can't argue with the metrics. So our customers use our platform to send these phishing simulations, to track improvement, to see what the engagement is. We just provide it. So these aren't data points that we get to hide behind. It's their data. And so they're sharing these success stories at peers, at different local networking events, saying, look, we had a phishing problem. This is what we're doing to combat it.
Can you give us some more information or some more statistics from that report?
Sure, absolutely. Probably not shocking. One of the things that resonates most with workers when it comes to phishing emails is office communication related themes. So you've received a file, you've received a voicemail, it's been attached to this email, someone has sent you a file from a scanner, you have an overdue invoice, you have a summons to go to court. Those are the types of things that get people to click. What could be surprising to some people is the things that are reward-based, like, hey, you've won a vacation, you've received an Amazon gift card. Those aren't things that tend to fool people at all. They're onto it. This year, we had enough data that we could even show some trends based on different industry verticals. And one of the things that stood out to me is somewhat amusing is in manufacturing, parking ticket phishing emails was the one that really got them riled up and clicking and something that was quite effective there.
I've had about a dozen of those in the last 2 to 3 months. A PCN notification, your vehicle was seen at this point. Click here to see the photo. The point is you never get to see the photo unless you want to go to court on many of these systems. How do we improve then the relationship between the authorities and individuals? Because if people are clicking on things that are related to the police or to tax offices, there's more has to be done by them surely to help educate people on what they shouldn't do and what they should expect should they get a notification from those government bodies.
They really are doing a lot there. It is a marketing campaign for them too, as far as reminding people what are the top scams, what you need to watch out for this year during this particular tax season, reminding people how they do their communications. Most organizations like that, as well as banks these days, are trying to educate consumers to say, we would never ask for your password in an email. We would never do this. And most are driving traffic to the website to get people to log in to some message center.
Well, one of the challenges of that is that banks and others often hide behind phone systems that don't display a caller ID. So even when they say to the customer, call us, if the customer does try and contact them, they have no real trust that the number is true. And when you get a security fraud alert from your bank that comes by email and phone, they appear to be very disconnected. How do we tighten up that side of the industry? Because again, if that's disconnected, it's very hard for a user to see something that's out of band.
They are trying to solve this with different technology as far as either pushing their own applications, their own notification centers, their own multi-factor authentication. And by design, many of these systems are good and they're effective, but they're only effective to a population that's connected to technology. These aren't things that are easy for my parents to use, for instance. I wish they would, but it is challenging. It's a lot for them to remember.
You talked earlier about the report. Where are the statistics coming from or the numbers that you use in the report?
We have 1,600 enterprise customers worldwide, and what we do is we draw trends based on industry verticals and things that we observe them doing the phishing simulations. So that's how we're able to extract things like, does time of day matter? What are the emotional triggers? Things of that nature, that goes in the report. The other side of that coin is the report rate. So I mentioned earlier that we now have over 10 million active people that are reporting our simulated phishing emails. So that gives us an idea of which industry is good at reporting, who's fast at it, who are the top reporters inside of that organization, how many people are reporting of the simulated phish versus clicking on it. And then the last bit of data that we're able to offer in this year's report is the percentage of reports that are real phishing emails. So we've been talking about simulations for quite some time. With the introduction of one of our newest services, Triage Managed Services, we're actually analyzing those reports for our customers to help them find live phishing emails in progress. And so this time will be the first that we talk about that.
You've mentioned some types of indicators and triggers already, but just now you mentioned emotional triggers. Can you give us an idea of what those are?
In the report, one of the top emotional triggers is curiosity. If you look at a lot of our phishing themes in the simulator product, the ones that have that element of curiosity tend to get people to click. And it could be something like, you have a secret admirer at work who sent you a gift card. Really? I have a secret admirer? Who is it? Of course I want to look at this card to see who it is. Another one might be to the effect of, due to the increase of stolen lunches in the break room, we've installed a camera in front of the refrigerator in order to crack down on this. And here is a link to the camera if you're curious. Imagine that situation. Maybe you're someone that has had their lunch stolen before. Well, of course you're going to want to click that link. You want to catch the person. Maybe you're the person stealing the lunches. You want to see, what's that camera angle? Have I been found out? Maybe you're in another office and you can't even believe that they have what a ridiculous problem of lunch stealing. So you want to just click the link to find out to the extent of what this problem is. That's an example of curiosity really getting people's attention.
Can you give us a few ideas of what people should be doing in order to reduce the risk of phishing in the organization?
Well, there's a number of settings on their email that they can do as an organization that are quite effective, actually. One is to enforce something called sender policy framework and domain keys, which essentially means you have an authorized list of mail servers that are allowed to use your domain. That's an important control, because what that does is the attackers just can't forge your domain name and get emails in. So we always recommend that. Another lightweight technical control that we find very helpful, and you can do this on almost every mail system now, is some sort of header to denote whether or not the email came from the outside or inside. So every email that we receive at PhishMe has a header that says external. And that puts you in a different frame of mind when you're looking at that email. So that's helpful. We want to give as many visual clues in order to help people do that. Another thing that we need to do is talk to the other business units that are sending emails to everyone and get some sort of common theme or template. If everyone's just choosing some random template, it makes it harder for people to figure out what's legitimate and what's not. And then the last thing is to communicate via two channels. Oftentimes, our business units are saying, hey, I'm about to send you an email, and it's going to take you to the intranet. It's almost having to hit people twice, one via email and one reminding them in some other format. It could be instant message. It could be something on the intranet to just give people a surety.
Aaron, thank you very much for your time today.
All right. Glad to do it.